Shalom Aleichem Chaver, this is Binyamin Hammer at the National Council of Young Israel. We'd like to welcome Rebbe and all of our participants for conference call number 110. Thank you, Rebbe.
You're very welcome. Let us begin. Question number one. Nowadays, Lamaisa, how often should one check his tefillin and mezuzahs? If one takes down his mezuzahs, must he be careful to put them back in the same places? Is there an issue of Ein Moridin Bekodesh if he puts a mezuzah that was previously on a doorway that was Chayim Midaraisa, on a doorway that was only Chayim Midarabona? Okay. In Simon Lametes, if you would fill in, it says Ein Tzricha Bedika La'olam. Says the Mishnah Berurah, says Kon Chavav, it's good to check them because Miskalkulin Min Hazeya. Min Hazeya. It's sweat. You know, the person is sweat, you know. He sweats in his forehead, sweats maybe in his arm. Rav Shlomo Zalman is quoted as saying that our tefillin are much more mahuder than the old ones, and it's better not to open them at all. Because if you open them, they can get worse. Less is what we call a reyasa. A reyasa means that it got wet, or it was in very hot surroundings. Same thing is true of mezuzahs. Mezuzahs, Shulchan Aruch Zabeferish, Nireish Tali Aleph, Aleph Nirodea. You have to check it. But nowadays, we put them in plastic saran wrap kind of thing. And there's no reyasa. There's no need to check. This is in the Piskei Tshuvos, footnote 30 and 33 in Simon Lama test. As far as putting it back in the same place, it's very difficult to do that. People, they take their, send the mezuzahs out to be checked. They take 20 mezuzahs. They come back. It's really somewhat difficult to know exactly what goes where. I do not believe is a halachic problem. I guess maybe it's better to put it back in the same place, but it's I do not believe we have to be makbid on it. Question two. If one buys a house, is there any bracha to be made? If so, when should it be made? Is there anything he should do special for Chanukah Sabayis or the shul bars that builds a new building? Okay. So, person has a new house. So you make a shechiyanu on a simple level. Should make a tova meitiv. What's good for you is shechiyanu, good for two people. Person and his spouse or his children, it's a tova meitiv. Interestingly, the Piskei Tshuvos in Simon Reish Chav Zayin, footnote 26, quotes, you should always make shechiyanu because you have an obligation to build a house for your children, for your wife, for your children. When do you make the bracha? Shulchan Aruch writes in Reish Chav Zayin, you make it when you buy the house. These days, the meaning is to wait. In the Mishnah Berurah, Shaar Tzion, Sukkot, and Chaf Aleph. When you buy it, almost every time you buy it, they can't move in yet. You have to make some alteration, something or other. You have to paint, whatever it is. It's not really ready to be inhabited. You don't put up mezuzahs right away until you actually move in. If you don't mezuzah, it's not royal adira as such. And then most important, you're happy when you put the mezuzahs on, right there in footnote 36, and the shechiyanu goes in the mezuzahs too, for that matter. So that's the proper minute to make a shechiyanu or a tova meitiv when you actually move in. Chanukah sabayis, you want to make a suda, there's nothing wrong. Is it a suda smitzvah? That's a question. A shul, also, it's appropriate to do some kind of a Chanukah Sabayis. But again, I think that unfortunately today, people make it these sudas in an overblown fashion. So understatement is good. So you want to do it, but I wouldn't do it in a very extravagant way. Three, is there an Inyan or letter on a Chiyuv to check an average suit for Shatnas? They are mostly made in Asia, Latin America, and the rate of Shatnas is quite literally less than 1%. Rabbi Yashiv is quoted as saying that its prevalence is that low. There's not even a mitzvah to check. Rabbi Yashiv is the Godel Ador, and he knows the halacha better than anybody. He says that it's a Mir She'en HaMatzui. There's no chiyuv to check. The same as we don't check for treifas in the Mir She'en HaMatzui. Nonetheless, an Indian there is. You're not going to check every animal for every treifa Mir She'en HaMatzui because they'll go crazy. But if you want, if it's an Indian, those who want to, you know, to get a non-shotness label and check it in the laboratory, it's an Indian, but I would not say it's a chiyuv. Four. There have been some recent news articles about the very concerning issue of fraudulent stock organizations and collectors, especially when the campaigns are digital. It seems clear that this is not an isolated issue, but quite widespread. How should the average person conduct themselves with causes that are not well vetted as or personal? How should a rabbi manage the shul's stocker funds under these circumstances? Proceed with caution. You give everybody a small amount of money. A small amount of money you can give to anybody. So if it's a fraud, it's a fraud. Small amount of money. And when people come to my door all the time and have a discretionary fund, everyone gets something. But for a larger amount, you have to make sure it's really properly vetted, the people you know, causes that you know. But I'm certain that over my many years of managing this discretionary fund, I've been duped, no doubt about it. So it even smell the shite though you're being duped. And maybe you should, your heart overpowers your brain and you give what you shouldn't be giving. You know, Chazal say, the inappropriate collectors for tzedakah, we'd be in trouble. We'd be brought to din, why we don't give more money. The fact that it's always in the back of our heads, the me'ena mehuganim, that protects us somewhat. Number five. May a service of a gabbai whose job is to publicly correct the Balkori, the father of Balkori, the problem kibbutz av, absolutely a problem. It's a bizoyim. You can't be mevazi your father, chalila v'chas. You're not supposed to correct your father even in private. You should not take that job. Six. Seems to be a premise in halacha to recite Asher immediately prior to the Chatzi Kaddish before the beginning of Muslim on Shabbos morning. Yet, seems to be common practice for Asher to be recited before returning to the Torah. The rabbi then speaks and the chazan then recites Chatzi Kaddish. Is there a basis for the latter hanhaga? That's a very good question. And some in Reish Pei Dalet, Mishavuos of Kotan Tezvav, the loyafsik between Ashrei and Kaddish, but the minigas to give it Rasha then? Is a Rashi in top Rashi in Brochus Chav Chesem Bay seems to say that was the minig. And the Piskei Chuvas in Reish Pei Dalet, footnote 157, as a Maram Shik had that minig. So it's an okay minig to give the drasha between Ashrei and Shmona Esrei. It's a whole question. Is the Ashrei primarily, is the Kaddish primarily on the Ashrei or is the Kaddish primarily before the Shmona Esrei? They're different Hagim in a different context by taking off Tefillin and Rosh Chodesh. You take it before or after the Kaddish. So most of us take it after the Kaddish, indicating the Kaddish goes back to the Ashrei. Others say no. You take it off before the Kaddish. The Kaddish is an intro to the Shmona Esrei. According to the second view, what we do is no problem whatsoever. Anyway, I believe that it's a minig vosik. It goes back many years for the Rav to give it Rosh Hashanah. Then, if you want to change it, you can change it. If I'm not mistaken, the Rabbi Tendler Zal's Levaya, they said he changed it because of this consideration. But I think in most shuls, the minhag still is to give the drasha without saying three psukim after the drasha to lead into the Chatzi Kaddish. Seven. What are the different shitas lemaisa for ending a non-Yom Kippur tzom? That's a very good question. Once again, the Piskei Tshuva talks about it here in Siman Tov Kuf Samach Beis, footnote 1. Quote Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe says 50 minutes. Shas Atrak, 40 minutes. This Rav Moshe Lishitosa. Rav Moshe looked out the window, and he didn't find stars till 45 or 50 minutes after the sunset. He felt that's the right time for all things. Rav Moshe says 50 minutes is the right time. Even if you're a more serious matter, the rice, the Shabbos, etc., 50 minutes, 5-0. Now, you know, most assume you can see stars much earlier than that. It depends where you look. Moshe was looking, I think he wrote to one of the children, he went on his balcony in the Lower East Side, but there was artificial light and there was a New York City smog. Hard to see. Even on a clear night, it's not completely clear, totally. So I remember we were in camp, and we went up to the Talmidim to look and see when they saw stars. This is now in the summertime, obviously, and in camp, in Kibbutz Moreh Hasha, and they were able to see stars just a little more than half an hour after the Shkia. That's in the summertime. And as we well know, it gets a little bit less in the springtime and in the fall. So it seems to me that there's room to be a little bit more makel than that. Although he claims in Eretz Yisrael, where he resides, this is in footnote 2, that she went 25 minutes in the winter and 35 minutes in the summer, which are pretty long times for Eretz Yisrael. The winter, by the way, is longer than the summer and the fall, which he doesn't note. But he quotes from Tukhachinsky, who only waited 17 minutes on a regular fast and 27 minutes on Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av is more chumah than the others. Tisha B'Av is mandatory. The others are, technically speaking, brought away in Misanin. 17 minutes is a little bit short. I remember reading that Shmuel Salant would wait 20 minutes. If you know in Eretz Yisrael, if you go looking for a minyan for Meir, Yerushalayim, 20 minutes, Eidavim. 20 minutes. Apparently they can see stars in 20 minutes. Don't know how. It's possible that they have 20 minutes after Yerushalayim, where their Shkia is later than our Shkia. Their Shkia is based on the mountains, and usually calculated based on sea level. So their 20 minutes could really be 25 minutes, and by that time you can really see stars, apparently, at least in parts of Eretz Yisrael. And then our shul, when it's, when's the fast over? I never tell them. I don't print in my bulletin when the fast is over. I print when we daven Ma'ariv. So we daven Ma'ariv about half an hour after the Shkia. And someone who will eat at that time based upon the printed bulletin, I think he's okay. I think 30 minutes really is okay. But I tell them when they get home from shul, they can eat. And then by that time, they're probably keeping Rav Moshe's man. So unless someone is weak, that man should be kept lechat chila. 8. If a Baal Kori allows a boy who's not yet bar mitzvah to lay in the mafter, do we say that since it's technically mutter, then b'dieva we leave it at that? Or should the mafter alibi be done again? Does it make a difference whether Baal Kori allowed it lechat chila because halacha doesn't prohibit it, even though the shul has never allowed such a thing? So if you look in the Mishnah Brura, Simon Reish Pei Dalet Sifkot Yud Gimel, a cotton is ola lemafter. Ola, he can get the aliyah. To lay in the mafter, some say, especially if he's just repeating what Shvi said, that's looking Piska Chuba said, footnote 97. Some limit it to the Shabbos before his bar mitzvah. Thinking some priest lechatchila, we call it bar mitzvah, they call him up after the Shabbos before the bar mitzvah. I think in the local yeshiva ben Nimi, that became the custom. In any event, you don't do it again. Nonetheless, the Baal Kori has no right to establish new practices if that's not the minhag hamakom. It shouldn't have let it done happen in the first place. But once it's done, it's done. 9. A pot in the lid, consider one clear, two kelim, nafkamina, nusuk of the bracha. For the beautiful sefer Chelkas Binyamin in Simon Kuf Kaf, in the Biurim in Simon Gimel, he has the same suffix. Is it one or is it two? Because it's not an afkamina. Because we follow the Aruch HaShulchan, we make, even on one clear, we make the bracha al tefilas kelim, which I think is a more prevalent minhag. So therefore, it's an interesting question, but if you follow the Aruch HaShulchan, there is no afkamina. 10. Where does a Torah institution draw the line when it comes to accepting money from a wealthy donor whose actions or midas are unabashedly not in accordance with Torah? Is there a line? Is flattery in general ever an appropriate means to raise money for Torah? Okay. I think there's a big difference if the person is giving this money privately or publicly. person is giving money privately and he does bad things, let it be a schus for him. There's nothing wrong with taking that money. Some rebbes or shashivas wouldn't take, but I don't know if that's meekah or din. It's fakert. Give him a schus. Give him a schus. However, if it's befarhetya, it's a big, big deal, then you have to be careful. You have to be careful. It shouldn't become a chil Hashem. It depends exactly, what types of actions or midos we're talking about, what kind of institution we're talking about. There is a line somewhere. Where exactly the line is will depend on the circumstances. As far as flattery, if he's a good Jew and gives money, of course you can flatter him. You should flatter him. He deserves it. He gave a nice donation, or you hope he will give a nice donation. But that's something which has been done for a time immemorial. Nothing wrong, but of course it should be worthy of it. And don't go overboard. 11. How important is Nusach HaTfilah, namely the tune? Is there a halachic basis for it? It's not completely clear what the question is. Do you mean the Nusach? Now, people have some, in most shuls, there's a standard Nusach for Friday night for Ma'ariv, or Chazaras HaShatz, for Shachris, for Mincha. They're different, Nusach HaTfilah, as we call it. Not you're singing some tune for Kelodon or for Kedusha. That's how I understood Nusach HaTfilah, but it also can mean a tune in the sense of what do you sing for those aforementioned parts of davening. In both cases, not surprisingly, it all depends on the minhag of the shul. In some places, only someone who, quote, knows Nusach is allowed to go up to the Yomet. That's how it should be ideally. People go up there and they it grates on your ears. He just doesn't know how to carry a tune at all. Or he's way off. He says a Yontif Digan Nusach on Shabbos, or Shabbos Digan Nusach on Yontif. There are regular Nuschals that we're accustomed to. Everyone recognizes the tunes. So it's proper to send someone up who knows these tunes. Someone not so careful. As far as what tunes to be sung for the various parts that you typically sing in, the Chadodi and Kelodon and Kedusha, in some places people make up all kinds of tunes. Yeah. My humble opinion is the Chazan should sing a tune that everybody knows. But there's this new tune, if no one knows it, doesn't have so much time. I believe that you should pick a tune that everybody knows, and I believe that that's what should be done. As far as what nusach should be sung if they're different nuschos, I'm not discussing the tunes. I'm discussing the davening. I'll just give one example of a Friday night. Friday night has recently become the Kalbach nusach for Kabbalah Shabbos, which has been popularized, I believe, primarily after Shlomo Kalbach passed away. As you said, it was just last Friday. And I'll tell you a story. In his lifetime, he came once for Shabbos to walk to Riverdale Community. He spoke in three different shuls. And Friday night, he did Kalbach Kabbalah Shabbos by Shlomo Kalbach. And people walked out. They weren't, they didn't appeal to them. So it was kind of Achim Rosh Kedoshim, became much more popular. And some shuls, it's regularly done all the time. Some shuls, it's never done. It would be considered wrong. That's not our nusach. And some shuls, the chazan can do whatever he wants. Full Kalbach, half Kalbach, no Kalbach. And that seems to me that's in our world, that's probably appropriate. And then, of course, for the Ma'ariv itself, if you grew up in a shtibl, you know that the nusach they have for Friday night Ma'ariv is different than the, we'll call it the Young Israel. Different nuschos. Somewhat related to nusach Ashkenaz and nusach Sfarad, a little bit. So once again, I believe if there's a set minig in that shul, that's what should be done, and the person who goes up there should know what the nusach is and hopefully be able to carry the tune properly. Question 12. Do the halachas of refusal when it comes to being asked to be shliach tzibur, apply it all today. So if the gabbai qualifies an adam chashuv, whom one should not refuse, is it appropriate to offer one services for Shabbos Yontif Yom Teruah lechatchila? All good questions. Simen nun gimel shifta zayin yisarev ma'at. Piskei Teshuvos for the 137 close to Puchacha, that you hesitate to indicate your humility. You don't think you're really royal lekach. But he asked you a second time. You got to start moving a little bit because second time maybe you really are a little bit more worthy, or maybe it's a question of shenav tircha de tzibura. And Rav Sternberg in Teshuvos Hanagas Kelek Alas in the Kufyud Beis quoted there in footnote 138. In Pesach, Shuva says, "Bisman hazeh." What's the chazan? The chazan says, "Kaddish and chazor es hashat." It's not a big sorora, and during the week, for sure not. Or mincha Shabbos Yontif also is no big deal. For no 139 there. If you see that no one wants to, it's a mitzvah. Like the chazan makes a mistake. Lo yer sarven be'os hashav, says there in Sif Yud Zayin. So there's also it's a. The whole shul's waiting for someone to go up there. So go. Prevent the tircha l'tzibur is a big mitzvah. And more than that, again, Eshel Avraham, if you know, after all your humility, you know that you're qualified, so you can prevent someone who's not qualified from taking the omud, which is, not so good. If you have a good voice, you should never refuse. Chalila could cause a punishment. You look at the Yalkut Shimoni and Malachim about Novos. Once he had a beautiful voice, once he didn't go to Yerushalayim, he suffered a terrible punishment. And Chazal say, on the pasuk of Kabbalah Hashem, Mehonecha, Altirihonecha, Ella Gronecha. If you have a nice voice, you should use it to, daven for the Yomid. People should enjoy it. But again, it's someone who knows the minhag of the shul and the people who enjoy his davening, he should daven, and the gabbai should ask him, and he should say yes. No need to say no. 13. General guidelines in terms of family planning. Specifically for a couple that already has several children and are in their mid-30s and living in the greater New York City area. For context of cost of living, stress of commuting, and possibly living in cramped space. Does it make a difference if they have at least one boy or girl? This is, of course, a very, very, very important and general question. It says in the Mishnah, a person should not be in bevatel from Peru Ravu unless he has a boy and a girl, which means that if he has a boy and a girl and decides to have no more children, he's going to be mevatel from Peru Ravu. Peru Ravu, a boy and a girl is a minimum. Doesn't mean that after that there's no mitzvah. It's a tremendous mitzvah. It's a mitzvah rabbah to have as many children as possible. It's a mitzvah rabbah. It's very, very important. People don't realize how important it is. Of course, there could be other competing considerations for a family to either space their children or to stop having children completely. It seems that the main criterion which governs couples' decisions in these matters is how much weight they give to the mitzvah of Peru Ravu. Do they give it a lot of weight or less weight? But it's crowded. But they're poor. It's true. You go to the Hasidic enclaves. People are poor and they're living in crowded conditions. But they view it as a big mitzvah to have more children. And they practice what they preach. Double digits is commonplace in the world of Hasidim. And they're happy with their lot. They see nachas from the wonderful children. And then they have a population explosion. That's their way of doing things. Yes, it is. It is cramped space. The cost of living is, they have to manage, of course. In those circles, the cost of living is much less because the yeshivas cost much less. They give less and they take less. A whole different way of thinking, and if you're poor, they'll let you in for free in most cases, because that's a kehillah. It's a wonderful thing. And the Olam HaYeshivas, as we'll call it, They're not so far behind the Chassidim. In the whole more modern world, they give much less weight, let's be honest, to the mitzvah of Pru Revu in its entire possibility. And the Memela, if there's less weight given to Pru Revu, so then cost of living, excessive commuting, and cramped space will be the determining factor. I do say that, you know, when a couple gets married, there are certain implicit understandings, and they should be honored, even if later changes ensue in one member of the couple. I believe, for example, that the primary decider in these questions should be the wife. She's the one who has to carry the child and plays a major role in raising the child. And if she married a fellow, they were, you know, more living a more, we'll call it, forgive the expression, modern Orthodox lifestyle, and they got married, then he decides to become very yeshivish or chassidish, and he wants more and more and more children. She has the right to say, I didn't sign up for this. A woman in Satmar who have a boy to go and say, I don't want any more children, that would be wrong on her part, because the expectation is they go to double digits if Hashem gives them that bracha. It seems to me, therefore, a husband has no right to pressure his wife to have more or less children. I think it's primarily her decision. And as far as having a little baby, right, 8 months old, so it seems to me waiting for a year is even lechatchila. The Chazon Ish is quoted as saying 6 months to a year lechatchila. Shlomo Zalman has the kasha, this is all the Nishmas Avram. How can it be? You only have one child? Even after one child, you'll have space and wait for a year? And the answer is yes. Number one, it's better for the health of the mother and the child, the Chazon Ish held. I think the doctors would agree. And number two, the Netziv, as you showed, that fundamentally the mitzvah rabbah is having one child. One child. I mean, the more the merrier. But even one child is the Iker mitzvah, the mitzvah of Shevis. Kodra of Nosim, that's the entire, quote, mitzvah after which you're a putter. But even according to us, a boy and a girl, you're supposed to have, but the fundamental mitzvah is having a single child. So therefore, the Chazon Ish held, even after one child, to wait for a year, is even lechatchila. I believe to wait up until 2 years is also okay, because that's what they did in the olden days. They would nurse till 2 years, and the nursing is in effect a contraceptive. After that, so then, you know, of course there are cases in which we say they want to wait a little bit longer. But, you know, if the couple is in the proper mindset and the woman is healthy and they want to have more children, it should be encouraged. You said they're in their mid-30s. So there are some people in their mid-30s already worried about Down syndrome. That's a fact. Many years ago, Avi Ner, I believe, from Bethel, saw this in his own community. You know, the people from Gush Emunim, Merkos Harav, are very, very into populating the Holy Land and having many more Jewish children, just like the Satmar Hasidim, we're not far from them. The only one difference was the Satmars would go well into their 40s, and his people would stop in the later 30s, and he couldn't understand why until he realized they're part of a Down syndrome, which, although the percentage is still quite small, I believe it's under 1% even until after 40, but still it's a larger percentage than in their 20s. So he wrote a letter in his newsletter for the show, listen, this is terrible. Because of a fear of a very remote possibility of happening, we are stopping to have many more children, which otherwise we would be able to have. They're healthy and strong, and they want to do it. He told him, have your child. If Khalilah is a Down's diagnosis, come to me. And either you'll keep the baby, you won't keep the baby, and they'll have to find alternatives. Rav Waldenberg had a cooler when it comes to these things. So again, it's every single case is different. You can't generalize completely. The question is generally family planning. Generally, the more children, the better. We believe in having more children. But again, there can be situations in which the wife is weak and she just can't handle it, or maybe someone's a special needs child, which I believe is another reason to space or stop having children. Rav Moshe specifically approves of the first, if she's weaker than average, and disapproves of the second. But I thought there's much a reason that she's taking care of the children that she has, and there's a special needs. That's another consideration to be brought to bear. But again, every single situation is personal, depending on the couple and their specific circumstances. Question number 15. In the last session, you never do chazara into a crock pot. Is there any permitted way of spooning out the food or soup while still in the crock pot and avoid the issur of megis? Very good question. Shemir Shabbos Kolchosa and Perek Aleph, Sif Lamed Beis, the new one Lamed Ches, says, in that kind of a case, you're allowed to spoon the food out of the crock pot. As long as you're sure it's Mavushal called Sarko. Why? Because Megis itself is a Chumra. Mavushal called Sarko, what could be wrong? Spooning out is a Chumra Gabi Chumra. So with Chumra Gabi Chumra, we don't have to worry about it if there's no possibility of putting it back. My children were younger, so they would raid the show on Friday night, and the way we had it, they couldn't take it out and put it back. So they were, based on that, they heard the shiur from me. When I wasn't looking, they would raid the chont, and they would spoon it out from the crock pot. So I think it's okay, la'alacha, based upon the Shemir Shabbos Kolchos. 16. In the situation where there's only one day Sheva Brachos is required, and the suda started before sunset, can they still say Sheva Brachos after Nacht? The short answer is no. As a machlokes, what does it mean, the first day? Does it mean the first day? Or does it mean the first meal? Nafka minas in both directions. And because of Safik Brachos Lahakel, we will only say the Sheva Brachos if it's the first day and the first meal. So that's why a Zivik Shenish either happen noontime, so they can bench before it gets dark, or they should make the chuppah after dark, especially not coming up to the winter, they change the clock, so that they can then make the Sheva Brachos at the when they bench a few hours later, since the chuppah took place after dark. 17. One is late for mincha. Should they say Shmon Esther with the shot if they will not be done before Kedusha or try to be done before the tzibur? Not sure what the second option really is. It really depends, I believe, in how late he was and how fast he davens and how fast the tzibur davens. If you're not going to be done before Kedusha, and it's not before Shkia, it's plenty of time, so it's better to wait to say Kedusha, and then daven Shmon Esrei, or we'll see soon to daven with the chazan. On the other hand, if you're not too late, and you daven a little bit quicker than they daven, or they wait for the Rav till he finishes, then he should start right away. 18. One is starting Chashakras Shmon Esrei after the Tibudim, so they will daven with the shots. Okay, they're going to wait till the chazan. However, Chazaras HaShatz is always said quickly. Can you start Shmon Esrei earlier and wait? If yes, how would you do so? Look, a person has to know the situation. You know how fast the chazan davens. You've heard him daven before. You know how fast you daven. And you just make a little calculation. How much before he starts should I start in order to get the kedusha at the same time? That's an important calculation to make. If you, I'm a shire, if I start a minute before him, will come to the same time to Kedusha. So when the chazan starts getting fidgety and looking around and taking a couple of steps, I think he's about to start, so you don't wait for him. You start right away. And hopefully, if you got it right, you'll then get to Kedusha the same time as him. If you're ahead of him, just wait. If you're behind him, there's a problem. So on that side of caution. 19. Or I'm late for Ma'ariv. If you start from the beginning, you will not daven Shmon Esrei with the Tzibur. Should you just start and say Shmon Esrei with the Tzibur? Not sure what that means. Means you'll start after that? If yes, how do you say the first part of Maariv? Do you say Baruch Hashem Le'olim, which is said to people can catch up? B, if Maariv is before it says, could you delay your catching up until after Zman Kriya Shema Rashi, which you catch up right after later, like Tefillah Tashlum? Okay. Seems that in the first part of the question, you should start when you start and skip Baruch Hashem Le'olim in order to begin Shemesh with a Tziva. I was crossed up exactly a week ago. I was at a wedding in Brooklyn. And, you know, you see, you find the minion. I was a little bit late. I figured, no problem. I'll catch up during Baruch Hashem Le'olim and skip it. Well, guess what? The Chazan didn't say Baruch Hashem Le'olim. I thought that was not right. It wasn't I don't understand why. It was a proper wedding of a proper yeshiva bacha, a cousin of mine, and proper rebbeim. I just skipped Baruch Hashem Le'olim. So I was sort of crossed up. Then it was such a long Shemoneh Esrei that I was able to, couldn't start then, was able to finish before the Rosh Hashiva finished. So I heard the Kaddish afterwards. That's what happened to me just literally a week ago. The truth is, this kind of a trick of skipping Baruch Hashem Le'olim may be necessary, even if you start with them. When I grew up in the shtibul, they daven so fast, I would start with them, and when they finished Baruch Hashem Le'olim, I was finishing Hashkiveinu. I just couldn't stay with them. That's always a built-in buffer. In case you can't daven as fast as they do, just skip Baruch Hashem Le'olim, which was, I used to do regularly in the shtibul. Obviously, that won't work for Shachris. The Shachris and the Shtibul, and I couldn't keep up with them, I would go ahead. I would be up to Ava Rabba when they were up to Yotzeror, and then we'd glide in together the Shemoneh Esrei. But for Maariv, the option to skip Baruch Hashem Le'olim is a better one. And if you come late, the best thing to do is to just start and hope it'll work out. Now, if it's Fort Seis, you're catching up, it seems to me you're allowed to delay a catching up till after Zman Kriya Shema. As a matter of fact, many Gdolei Rabbonim, I believe Rav Shechter Shlita among them, if they'll daven before Tzeis, like typically on a Friday night minyan, lechatchila, they will not say Birchas Kriya Shema. They'll say Shemoneh Esrei with the Tzibur and daven Birchas Kriya Shema after Tzeis Kochavim. I know Smichas Gula Tfila. No. Doesn't matter. It's more important to say Birchas Kriya Shema Bizman. So even though that's not our practice in a typical case, if you come late, that's a proper practice. Final question 20. Why did the Nachash push Chava's hand to touch the Eitz Hadas to show her she would not die? Why did the Nachash himself touch the Eitz Hadas to show her? That's a good question. But the answer is very simple. The Rabbono Shalom commanded humans about the Eitz Hadas. He never commanded the Nachash about the Eitz Hadas. So therefore, if the Nachash would touch Eitz Hadas and wouldn't die, it wouldn't prove anything to the woman. Because after all, she was commanded and he was not. That's why he got Chava to touch Eitz Hadas, and this way he fooled her. Okay.
Rebbe, thank you very much. Chavra, Bezrat Hashem will call upon Rebbe again in the near future. Thank you. Have a good night.
Bye.